Good afternoon. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, April 24th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:33 p.m. Today we have President Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Michicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. Thank you to those assisting us. We have two items today on our agenda. First, the committee will take up public testimony for SB 52, sponsored by Senator Michicki. After we close public testimony, we will then take up public testimony for SB 80, sponsored by Senator Birch. And after closing public testimony, we will see if it is the will of the committee to move the bill out. I'd also like to ask members to keep your questions and comments focused and brief. And at this time, we will open public testimony for SB 52, unless Senator Michicki wants to make a comment before we do.
Over the last 7 years, I think I've made enough comments about this bill, Madam Chair. I'm looking forward to hearing from the public and then taking those issues into consideration.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to limit public testimony to 2 minutes, and we will go to the first person who signed in. So opening public testimony, Beverly Schnunover, please. Oh, you are here in the room. I see that. Welcome to Senate Judiciary this afternoon. Please state your name for the record and your affiliation and provide your testimony, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Beverly Schnunover, and I'm the acting director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Board. These state agencies are statutorily charged with planning and coordinating behavioral health services funded by the state of Alaska. The boards are in full support of SB 52, which provides a much-needed update to the Title IV provisions and includes prevention measures to reduce underage drinking. We've made progress to reduce underage drinking. According to the annual Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, or the YRBS, over the last 25 years, there's been declines in the percentage of youth starting drinking before 13 years of age. However, we know that there's still underage drinking in Alaska, including binge drinking. In 2017, nearly 14% of the students surveyed in the YRBS reported binge drinking in the past 30 days. And that's 4 or more drinks in a row for females, 5 or more drinks in a row for males. Underage drinking, especially binge drinking, is harmful to adolescent brain development. And we also don't want Alaskan teens engaging in other risky behaviors while under the influence of alcohol. We believe the preventative measures outlined in SB 52 will reduce underage drinking in Alaska for the following reasons. SB 52 holds adults who supply alcohol to youth accountable by maintaining current penalties for furnishing alcohol to a minor, especially if providing alcohol causes the youth harm or is a repeat offense, both of which are felonies. This bill also provides much-needed resources for enforcement of Title IV by increasing license fees, many of which have not been increased in decades, which has continued to limit the ABC Board's ability to do their job. And that includes ensuring that businesses do not sell or serve alcohol to minors. Thank you to the sponsor of this bill, Senator Michicki, for his steadfast leadership, to the large group of diverse contributors who have worked hard to find solutions through compromise and move these changes forward for the last 7 years. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Schnunover. And next we have, I see Lee Ellis is online for questions, but Lee, would you like to provide testimony as well?
Yeah, absolutely, if I may, Madam Senator.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
For the record, my name is Lee Ellis. I am the president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. The Brewers Guild of Alaska is definitely in support of SB 52. We feel that over the multi-year process of developing all the compromises in this bill, we have found a bill that we find to be fair. We don't find this bill to be a gift to the Brewers Guild in any way, shape, or form, but we find it to be fair to every stakeholder in the process. We want to honor that process by supporting this bill and supporting the efforts of Senator Michicki and all others that were involved in it. We find that it's going to benefit our industry and the idea that it's going to clean up the regulations that affect our industry at this current time for a brewery to start up. Oftentimes they have to retain a lawyer just to find their way through the regulatory process to open a business, which we find to be antithetical to the benefit of the Alaska economy. Manufacturers have been a bright spot in the economy of Alaska in the last couple of years. So anything we can do to make it easier to open and start an entrepreneurial business is definitely a benefit to us. It still maintains regulation on our tap rooms. It still maintains the three-tier system that's critical for both wholesalers, manufacturers, and retailers. And so we think that this has been the best work of all these groups, and that's why we support it.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. Appreciate your testimony this afternoon. Moving to Haines, Jan Hill, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and provide your testimony on SB 52, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Jan Hill, and I'm calling in from Haines. I was a member of the Title IV Review Steering Committee and involved throughout the process, including serving as a co-chair of the Local Options Subcommittee with Chris Simon, who was formerly with the Department of Education and Early Development. Title IV very much needs to be modernized, and Senate Bill 52 is a huge step forward. As co-chair of the Local Option Committee, we talked extensively about the impacts of alcohol in dry and damp communities, alcohol-related crimes, and the need to improve Title IV in order to increase enforcement. While there's still much work to be done with local option laws, Senate Bill 52 makes some important changes. One of these is giving rural communities access to existing data about legal alcohol sales and deliveries so communities and law enforcement can understand the flow of alcohol into rural Alaska. Another is regulating internet sales to ensure that a person in a dry community is not using this loophole to get around the monthly order limits in our laws. I wholeheartedly support this bill, and I urge you to pass Senate Bill 52 this year. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Jan, for taking the time to weigh in. We appreciate that. Next, we'll go to Logan Daniels, calling in from Anchorage. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name and provide your testimony for Senate Bill 52.
Hi, my name is Logan Daniels, L-O-G-A-N-D-A-N-I-E-L-S, and I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 52. Anything we can do to kind of modernize the language of the bill, as well as just aid in the work that's been done to limit the ability for youth to get alcohol, will be of great importance. I know recently it's been kind of blowing up. There was a baseball player from South who graduated and went down to 48, and he was one of my friend's brother, so kind of a weird relation there. But he was hit and killed by a 16-year-old drunk driver on Thursday, I believe. So anything we can do to reduce the likelihood of that happening in our community, I am all for. And I know Liberty 2 will be a great step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Daniels. Anna Brawley, you're online for questions. Is there anything that you would like to say while we have public testimony open?
No, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. I'm not seeing anyone else online. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify in SB 52? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. I want to remind members that amendments for this bill are due to my office by Thursday noon. My intention is to take up amendments on Friday, and if it's the will of the committee, then to move it out. So now we are ready to move on to the next item on the agenda, SB 80 by Senator Birch. And we are going to open public testimony for that as well at this time. So this is, and the bill title, we should read the bill title. Be a good idea. So this is an act relating to proposing and enacting laws by initiative, and we'll open public testimony. Let's see who we have. And we have online Katie Capozzi. No, she is here in the room. It's when I see off net, I think of on the phone, so sorry. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and share your testimony, please.
Thanks. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Katie Capozzi, and I serve as the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber. The Alaska Chamber is a nonprofit founded in 1953, working to promote a positive business environment in Alaska. We represent hundreds of businesses, manufacturers, and local chambers across the state. Our local companies employ more than 100,000 hardworking Alaskans. We believe that SB 80 is required to maintain the integrity of the signature gathering process for a ballot measure. Once a voter signs their name to specific ballot measure language, their support should be applied only to the exact language to which they lent their name. If any court or courts decides to alter or remove language from the initiative, it cannot be assumed that the voter's support remains. Should a court sever language from a proposed ballot measure, it should be mandatory that initiative proponents go back and ask voters to support the revised language that would actually appear on the ballot. As such, we support this legislation and applaud your effort to correct a deficiency that has been overlooked in the ballot initiative process. We also believe SB 80 will result in fewer protracted legal battles once ballot measure proponents understand that should any section of their initiative not pass constitutional muster, they would be required to revert to the signature gathering stage of the process. This should result in more carefully crafted ballot measures being proposed at the outset, which means a smoother, more predictable process for all parties, whether they support or oppose the ballot measure in question. In summary, we support SB 80 and appreciate the opportunity to represent our membership's view on this important topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Capozzi. We appreciate your testimony today. Online, calling from Anchorage, Laura Bonner. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Ms. Bonner, please state your name for the record and share your testimony on SB 80, please.
Hello, my name is Laura Bonner. I'm retired and I speak for myself. I strongly oppose Senate Bill 80. It would usurp the people's power in the initiative process. The gathering of signatures demands a great deal of time, effort, and expense to obtain the number of signatures required in all 40 districts. If SB 80 is passed, that process would have to start all over if even one word was changed, added, or deleted after judicial review or a court decision. I've signed quite a few petitions over the years. Some I signed only because the issue I thought should come before the voters or the public or passed by the legislature. It may be a measure that was proposed by a legislator but never made it to a floor vote for passage by both House and the Senate. I've seen legislators support a proposed bill but voted against it on the floor due to amendments and after receiving more information. It's the floor vote that matters for the legislature. My vote on the ballot determines whether I ultimately support or oppose the measure. The voters' initiative constitutional right should not be stifled, and passage of Senate Bill 80 would do just that. I'm not an attorney, but I think there may be constitutional issues regarding this bill. As a 47-year resident and voter, I oppose Senate Bill 80. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Bonner. We appreciate you joining us this afternoon. I'm not seeing anyone else online. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify regarding SB 80? Oh, we just had a new person join us online. Okay, and I see Bethany Markham has joined us. Welcome, Ms. Markham, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and share your testimony regarding SB 80.
My name is Bethany Markham, B-E-T-H-A-N-Y, last name Markham, M-A-R-C-U-M. Chairman Hughes and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Alaska is indeed fortunate to have a constitutionally enshrined ballot initiative process. Not all states trust their citizens to participate directly in the legislative process, and while there are pros and cons, most Alaskans would agree that this is a valuable right. In order for the ballot initiative process to continue to have value for future generations of Alaskans, it's imperative that the integrity of the process is ensured. Currently, there is a loophole created by past Supreme Court decisions of our state, which allows our courts to tamper with initiative language. While the intention may be quite good, for example, to remove unconstitutional provisions, the end result can be that the words which voters see on their ballots may in fact be different than the language which was displayed to them and other voters who earlier signed the petition booklets. Scenario last year with ballot measure one. It is truly an injustice to Alaska voters when the very words they approved for the ballot are changed by unelected judges. A further effect of this loophole is that the legislature can be stripped of its role to act as a counterbalance in the ballot initiative process. The legislature has the right to enact legislation substantially the same as proposed initiatives, thus removing those initiatives from the ballot. So when initiative language is stricken or changed by the court, the legislature effectively loses its ability to provide oversight on the process. As it stands now, initiatives can be presented to voters in the ballot box with language that is different than that which they supported with their signatures and different than the version reviewed by the legislature. It would be good policy for this technicality to be addressed, and I urge the committee to consider how Senate Bill 80 would rectify this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Markham, for your testimony this afternoon. I'm not seeing anyone else online, I'll put a shout out in the room. Is there anyone? Okay, with that, we will close testimony. Are there any comments or questions from committee members?
Madam
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just speak briefly. I provided the committee with a legal opinion from Legislative Legal Services about the constitutionality of this, and they were kind enough to give me the rule of construction that they figured the Supreme Court would use looking at it in Latin, which I won't even try to read. But in essence, their interpretation was that the Constitution provides some limits and some strictures on the people's ability to exercise the legislative power directly, and that having those limits and rules in place means that we don't get to do, as a legislature, other limits and rules on the people's power. at least not through statute. And I guess I sort of liken it. I got this answer once before. I had some constituents who said to me, if anybody ever wants to be on the ballot for president in Alaska in the future, we got to get their tax returns released. And I said, it's not a thing I'm interested in. They said, well, how about just the APOC requirements that you have to live by and governors have to disclose? Why don't you make candidates for president do that? And I thought, well, let's look at it. And when I went to Legislative Legal Services, they didn't say it in Latin, but they said the same thing. They said the U.S. Constitution has a set of qualifications for president, and so the state of Alaska doesn't get to put more qualifications on there. Same principle. So you will notice I have not introduced a bill on making presidential candidates disclose their finances. So that concern, I think, is prominent with this bill. It's got a long way to go, so I won't hold it up today, but that's top of my mind.
Thank you, Senator Keel. And I reviewed the memo, and I'd just like to make a few comments on the record. The restrictions that are in the Constitution in Article 11, Section 7, the initiative should not be used to dedicate revenues, make or repeal appropriations, create courts, define the jurisdiction of courts or prescribe their roles, or enact local or special legislation. And as I read that, I realize that those are restrictions on content. They're not on process. I also noticed that the lawmaking power, which is addressed a page or so later in the Constitution, depending on the size of your booklet, is in Article 12. It talks about the lawmaking power. And I'll read, as used in this Constitution, the terms by law and by the legislature or variation of these terms are used interchangeably when related to lawmaking powers. Unless clearly inapplicable, the lawmaking powers assigned to the legislature may be exercised by the people through the initiative, subject to the limitations of Article 11, which I just read, which are content restrictions. So then we look at... we consider that are we somehow creating an imbalance in the lawmaking powers between the initiative and what the legislature can do. When we pass a law and the governor signs it and it's in law, then it can go to court and we can find out that there are sections that are unconstitutional from a bill. So those can be pulled out, but the rest of the bill stands. So in our process, we have severability. And I was thinking, are we actually taking that away from this? Actually, we are not. Because if an initiative were to pass and become law. I believe it becomes law maybe 90 days after it's passed. And at some point, it were challenged in court, the same thing could happen. At that point, the court could take out parts that they deemed unconstitutional and the rest would stand. So I see those lawmaking powers being very balanced, because what we're talking about here is severability, not after it's law, like it is in when we pass laws. We're talking about in the process. So, and I'll just note that a side note here. I think that those that are putting forward initiatives are going to work a lot harder and do a lot better to make sure their drafted language is very accurate, and I believe this will reduce work and time and effort and money spent in the Lieutenant Governor's office as well as in the court system. But back to the the balance and the lawmaking power, this is not a perfect analogy by any means. But the way I see this, if in the initiative process the people are signing what they believe is going to go on the ballot, then if it gets rewritten, something else is going in the ballot. That would be likened a bit, and again, this is not a perfect analogy, but if I were to co-sponsor a bill in this legislature and vote yes for it, it would be like that bill could be rewritten before the governor would sign it, and then all this, and into something I might not like, and then lo and behold, I voted for it, I co-sponsored it, and it's become something different. So this is very much about the process. The severability still stands for the initiative process after it's law. The courts could find something, a part of it, that's not constitutional, and the rest would stand. This is very much about during the process. So I just wanted to get that on the record, because Ledge Legal does a good job looking through things, and sometimes they hit the nail on the head on this one. I do think the restrictions in the Constitution are content related, and I believe the severability still holds for the initiative process after it becomes law. So just want to make those closing comments. Does anyone else have any comments they'd like to make? So I'd like to give the sponsor a chance to do some wrap-up comments.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you very much for those closing comments. Those are right on the money, and basically hit to the heart of the issue here. And I think, you know, fundamentally it boils down to truth in advertising. Chris Birch, Senate District M, South Anchorage. Again, thank you very much for hearing this afternoon and for the public testimony. The SB 80 actually restores a check in the checks and balances of the constitutional framers envisioned for the initiative process. I mean, this is a checks and balances issue. The intent of the voters at the signature phase should matter. When signing a petition, they are not giving their support to a general concept for legislation, which will be determined by the courts, and the courts should not be empowered to divine the intent of those who support an initiative to guess what degree of changes would be permissible. The legislature has an obligation and a right by the Constitution to stop an initiative by enacting similarly situated legislation. If the courts revise initiatives after the legislative review process, they deny the legislature its right to review the initiative as revised. Madam Chair, thank you again for this opportunity to present SB 80, and I would appreciate the committee's support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Birch. Madam Vice Chair, do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 80, Work Order Number 31-LS0185-U from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the bill moves from a committee. Congratulations, Senator Birch, and we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. just want to remind committee members that amendments to both SB 52 and HB 12 are due to my office by noon Thursday. And those amendments this time should be mailed to Regina Largent, by the way, as she is filling in during Mr. Witt's absence. So, seeing no other business before the committee, we are going to adjourn at 2 p.m.